Yo.
I know what that is. Well, hello, everybody out there in music video land. Welcome to 2015. Happy New Year. And welcome to Music Video Land Podcast. My name is Adam Fairholm of IMVDB, and with me as usual, Mr. Doug Klinger of IMVDB.
Hey, Daddy-O.
There we go. There it is. And then Mr. Adam Alexander of Fringe Music Fix.
Hey.
And
we're working out the kinks.
We're working out the kinks, yeah, because this is a new kind of a new format for us.
We're flipping shit up. We're doing a lot of different things with the podcast format here in 2015. We also say years weird now.
Yeah, 2015. That's the hip new way. I don't know if you guys knew about this, but the hip new way to say years. And you know, if you've listened to or are a fan of IMVDB, the Internet Music Video Database, we've had a podcast for a long time since a while. I think this is our 4-year anniversary of having a podcast, Doug. I think our first episode was in January 2011. I don't even remember that.
We've been doing this podcast thing before podcasts were cool. Podcasts are cool now, and we've been doing them long enough to where we were embarrassed by it at one time.
We literally didn't want anybody to listen. We were ashamed in public.
We would make a podcast and then immediately just bury it in the ground.
Yeah, definitely. We'd record it on one audio via, you know, one audio cassette tape, bury it. There's a lot of great episodes lost to time before Adam Alexander came into the picture. So yeah, we've been doing this for a while, and we're kind of switching up the format, and we have gone through a lot of different formats in the past few years, but we're kind of breaking it off, and this weekly podcast is kind of a distillation, if you will, of what we've been doing for a few years, which is talking about the week in music videos, because I think music videos are at a point where awesome things are happening every week, and we're going to get together every week, just the three of us, and talk about it. That's
just the boys.
Just the boys.
I think it's also important to mention, though, if as a listener of this podcast, you're like, well, wait, I fucking love the interviews. Fuck you guys. I say that's a valid point. And so because of that, we are also going to do podcasts that are only interviews. How about that?
Ooh. Wow. That's a concept. That's a concept I can get on board with.
Yeah, that's fun, right? Because then if you do like interviews, you don't have to listen to this mumbo jumbo that's going on right now. You can just listen to the interview and do that. And then, in addition to those two podcasts, we're going to try some other crazy stuff, right? Yeah, I think we'll try even further. I think we might even, I don't know, I don't think we will say what else we got in store, but we might have some other podcasts in addition to those two.
You're right. We might have something up our sleeve, and then additionally to that, we do have a daily podcast. A daily two-hour podcast from Adam Alexander called "Just Thinking with Adam."
Yeah, right.
Adam, have you been? How many episodes have you done of that so far?
I'm still working on the first. It's been a 4-day edit.
Ooh,
which is important, right? You got a lot of thoughts and you're trying to condense them down. No, I get that. That makes a lot of sense. There's a lot of things to think about in Fringe Music Fix, Adam Alexander world. Mike, one thing I wanted to ask about Adam Alexander World, is it colder in Canada right now than it is in New York City?
That I don't know.
How cold is it in Canada?
Right now we've had and I'm talking Celsius, but it's been like almost -30 with wind chill early this week.
Holy shit. All right, I'm not even going to... So, this conversation's over. That's crazy. This is the world we live super in. Cold.
Wait, so super negative, cold. Negative 30 Celsius is negative 22 Fahrenheit. Wow, that's insane. Absolutely insane.
That's cold. That makes me feel less bad about how cold it is here in Brooklyn and in other parts of New York.
I'm also like trying to preserve some hydro right now and keep the bills down so I can pay for my internet. So I have like no heat on right now.
So if, okay, if Adam Alexander is not on the podcast next week, you know it's because he's heating his house instead of paying for the internet, which is...
And we need to change the subject because this is getting pretty sad. So
we need to move on a little bit. So
I was like, I also don't have shoes. If anyone has shoes, please send them to me.
So we should mention that. So this feed, the one you're listening to now, will continue on. But if you go to imvdb.com/podcast, you'll see the other podcasts that we're working on, and those will be separate feeds.
Yeah, those would be different feeds, and I think this podcast should keep the numbers that we've been counting.
Really? You think you should keep the... Okay, I can see that.
I think this podcast, because we've done like an incarnation of this show within that stretch, and so I think this, as the weekly podcast, is where the numbers go.
Okay.
So what number then is this? 1 million.
Yeah. This is podcast 1,000,005. Let me just look this up really quick. And this would be number 138. And it is the week of January... this is January 9th, 2015, Friday. And we are kind of... This is the first week of the new year. And last week we released... I don't know if you guys saw the post I posted about... The times that music videos come out during the year, and kind of looking at the hot spots based on the top 25 music videos, which is not, you know, a super, you know, top 25 is sort of representative.
But it's, you know, the videos in the top 25 are all so massive that there are so many big videos that are like not even in the top 100.
But looking at the ones that are like the top of the top, I just thought it was interesting to look at when they were released. And January is in terms of like average views, January last year was only second to May in terms of average views for music video releases. The third is March. And the fourth is February. So the music video season, if you could call it that, is kind of top heavy. Although last year we had, in terms of like big blockbuster hits, May and August were by far the most popular music video months. So
when did Anaconda come out? Do you remember?
Anaconda and Shake It Off were both released within a day of each other in August.
So August was a big month.
August was a very big month. Although we talked a little bit about the kind of anomaly of Dark Horse. Dark Horse was by far the biggest music video of 2014, and I talked a little bit in the post about how it was. I don't remember if when Katy Perry's Prism album came out in November of 2013-ish, I think, and Roar was the first single. I think it was a little earlier, maybe September 2013, and then the second single was going to be Unconditionally, and people were like, fuck that, then that, you know, we want to hear Dark Horse, that's our jam. And they kind of forced it into a single in a way. And it was released as a single in December 2013 and charted on the Billboard chart basically all of February into March, but the music video didn't come out until February 20th, which is really rare for a music video. Usually they're coming out around the same time the single is released. So it was just a really interesting story of, like, if you're interested in the, you know, kind of the numbers game of music videos of you know, it racked up 750 million views in 2013. So, or sorry, 2014. So maybe that's kind of a good way to go, is to release a music video when something is really popular instead of at the very beginning.
Usually the music video usually kind of is a lead into that, and that's what we kind of see most often. But no, you're right. Katy Perry proved us wrong.
Yeah, we saw a lot of interesting kind of takes on what to do there in 2014. Because it's never, but there's not a lot of like common wisdom, right? There's not a lot of, if you hired a consultant to tell you when to release your music video for your hit single, you know, they're going to shrug their shoulders because they don't know when, you know, how well the single's going to perform. So we had instances like that. What's that? God, that song that Kevin James Lees did the video for a few years ago. That was a super sleeper hit.
One Republic. Which one was it?
It was Counting Stars, and that was the basis of a music video that was released months before it charted. But we also had really interesting instances in 2014 of Shake It Off being released at literally the same time the single was, and kind of the same thing for Anaconda. But we also had, you know, videos like Problem by Ariana Grande, which was released, you know, weeks after the single was charting. And then
on the other side, we also got Wiggle.
Right, yeah. Which I was like surprised the music charted video so was high. Like,
yeah, but the music video was, you know, like way early.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Way. And I was really shocked to see that so high up there.
I mean, you kind of like called it as being like a sound that's like a hit. You were like, this kid's got pizzazz. you didn't say that, but you kind of like were like, this guy comes together. All right, none of this is what you said, but you did kind of indicate to me that you thought that this was going to be a popular song, and video, and it was.
It was directed by Colin Tilley. Jason Derulo just tried super hard with his last album, and he did pretty good.
He tried super hard, but in a good way, you mean?
Oh, in not a like, good way. And not like he's trying overture. Too hard. Yeah, exactly. So, you know, so that was last year. We're talking about old news here, you know?
This show, although you introduced it as Music Video Land, we also call it This Week in Music Videos. And so because of that, we should talk about some of this week's music videos.
I like the way you think, Doug.
But the weird thing is, because we've taken a little bit of a break, and because things are still kind of just ramping up for the year, this particular episode features some videos from prior to this week.
Yeah, but I think we should start out with kind of like the story, the first big music video story of the year.
Oh, yeah, no, we're definitely starting now.
And that is, you know, if we're talking about music, big music videos from 2014, our number one music video of last year was Chandelier.
Number one favorite.
I think it was 8 in terms of views, which is obviously great in the top 10. But that was Chandelier by Sia, directed by Sia and Daniel Askill, and starring Maddie Ziegler of Dance Moms.
And choreographed by Ryan Heffington.
Exactly.
I feel like you got to hit when we talk about this video. You got to like hit all those notes.
Yeah,
like those are the people who made it happen.
Exactly. And you know, obviously, you probably have seen this video. And I was kind of so. It's always interesting to me, like the concept of like spiritual sequels. Like there was a when you think about the movie Twins from the 80s. With Arnold Schwarzenegger and Danny DeVito, that movie never had a true sequel, but the spiritual sequel was Junior.
I get it.
Yeah, you get it definitely. And this is a spiritual sequel, and we're taking the Chandelier just had Maddie Ziegler in it dancing, and we're adding another person to the mix here, and that is Mr. Shia LaBeouf. Who, that is not the way you say his name, but that's my preferred way of saying his name.
That's fine. I feel like there's a few ways to say his name.
LaBeouf? Yeah.
And Shy. How would you say his name?
I think that's pretty close.
You say Shy or Shia?
Adam?
Well, the first name is the trickier part, but I think you got the last
What
name,
do you
right?
say is what I asked.
I think I say Shia.
No, you don't. You say Shia?
I say Sia.
Okay. But what... Which is interesting. Their names are spelled very similarly.
And they both have worn paper bags on their heads.
Oh, weird. Now you're getting too deep, Adam. Come up for air, buddy.
No, I know Shia LaBeouf wore the bag over his head for that weird art installation he did, but when did Maddie Ziegler wear a bag over her head?
No, Sia. Not Maddie, but Sia.
Sia. Oh, yeah. Sia's brown banging it all the time. she's into... If you were like, picture what Sia looks like, my mental image is of like Sia from 10 years ago, because I don't know what she looks like now. She's very
right. Private. You just got her with crayons on her face.
That's the first thing that what's always. The name of that album? Some People Have Real Problems or something.
Yeah, when I first saw that album for forever, I would just refer to like my sister who was really into that album. I'd just be like, where's that album with that crayon girl face? And she'd know who I was talking about. I didn't know who Sia was.
Your sister's on the cutting edge. Cause
oh, she's what's up. Oh man.
Man, my nice. Sister. So this
No, could just be... then. Just then. That was her moment.
And I say this is a spiritual sequel because it's for a song called Elastic Heart. And the kind of concept is it's Shia LaBeouf and Maddie Ziegler in a cage, this giant wrought iron bird cage kind of looking deal. It's big. It's like probably like, I don't know. Like,
it's like a Costco bird cage.
It's it is. Yeah, it's pretty impressive. It's like it's a pretty impressive set piece, I think, because it's also like solid. Like at a point, like Shia LaBeouf is climbing it, like pretty impressively. Also,
yeah, this dude is ripped. I didn't know how
ripped he's a strong. He's a strong man. I could not do any of that. So yeah, he like climbs up and it like it's there. It's massive.
And Maddie,
that's not true. You can grow a pretty good beard though.
That's so for sure, but I can't.
You've got. That
I can't
part.
Lift my body, and also like looking at Shia LaBeouf, I feel like he grew that beard in like 10 minutes. Like he didn't have that beard when he got the set, and they were like, "Oh, we really thought you had a beard." And he's like, "No problem," and he just like went to the bathroom and came back out, and he had that beard. Like Shia LaBeouf is like such an interesting person to me. He is like one of the most interesting people in Hollywood to me, and there was a second where he was like really slipping, but he's starting to recover in I feel like some people's opinions. I think he's a pretty cool dude. Anyway, I feel like I've been talking about how strong and cool he is. This is like Doug Loves Shia LaBeouf podcast.
Well, it's interesting that he did this video because I mean I've been hoping for years for this idea of like, you know, we had Andrew Garfield playing, a cross-dressing man in the Arcade Fire We Exist video earlier this year. We had Jake Gyllenhaal in the Shoes We Dance video. I feel like it's becoming more and more acceptable to use music videos as a way to, play a small part. And this is definitely a part for him because this is a full-on interpretive dance. If we haven't mentioned before, Maddie Ziegler is in basically the exact same Sia wig and nude leotard or nude—I don't even know what the name
skin,
is.
Just like a skin-colored leotard.
Yeah.
The basically. Same thing that's like ratty and dirty.
But it's dirtier this time. It's dirtier,
right? Because she's been fighting.
Yeah, and then Shia LaBeouf is in some skivvies.
It's pretty impressive, by the way, Adam, that you've said his name differently every time.
Yeah, well, I'm just trying to play the field here.
That's fine. You've got to hit it at least once.
Exactly. So, for my sound, but for my reel, when I try out for your NPR, voice reel. All things considered.
Yeah.
And this is an interpretive dance. As was the previous video, that was a singular interpretive dance. I feel like you can get into more like of a story, which people are the Sia Chandelier video. I feel like people were pretty much got what was going on, even though it was a dance. There was interpretation, but it wasn't like widely varying opinions of like what Sia's dance moves mean. This one, they packed in a lot more stuff for people to pick apart. There's just a lot of, there's not a lot of dancing in this. It's more like a interpretive, two-person narrative dance, if that makes any sense.
Technically, what you would call what they're doing the whole time is still like part of an overall dance performance. Although, like what Maddie Ziegler is doing in the Chandelier video is a lot more like a lot of it can be seen as traditional dancing in a sense, whereas some of what you're seeing in the Elastic Heart video is like definitely like a lot more narrative in the dancing, and they're definitely a lot more like different types of interactions between the characters. Obviously, a lot of the depth of it comes from the fact that there are two people that can, you know, kind of help interact with one another and tell a story through that. Because the set is a lot more toned down, other than this massive cage. I mean, the chandelier video, the set is pretty complex. There's a lot to it. You know, it's a rundown apartment essentially, but it's you know, it was a lot more. This is a white room outside of this cage, mm-hmm. and so, but given. It's still, Chandelier has still got plenty of moments, I think, left to interpretation. I think there is a lot in there that you can take how you want. Mm-hmm. You know, there's definitely like a narrative that they were after, or that was the inspiration for what they were doing in the video. But I think when you're dealing with interpretive dance, you are dealing with people interpreting it in ways, and you can't really control that as the artist.
I've talked to people who have watched Chandelier and Elastic Heart, and for whatever reason, I'm not sure what that might be, but people really want to try to explain Elastic Heart more so than Chandelier. Maybe that's what Adam is touching on a little bit there. It almost commands some kind of an explanation as to what's gone on, whereas Chandelier can be just enjoyed as an awesome dance video as well. It has that narrative, but
yeah, I actually think that makes a lot of sense. It is interesting that you didn't I feel like people are definitely picking this video apart a lot more than the last one, and there's a lot of elements that are the same from the last video and this video that people are reacting to differently now. I feel like what Maddie Ziegler has on in this video has been more impactful in this case than it was the last time, and her outfit hasn't changed, and I think that's super interesting.
Well, you have the addition of... So, we should explain a little bit of the controversy around this video. And I hesitate to call it controversy because... Well, I guess it is controversy. So, Adam, you were retweeting some Sia tweets last night that were essentially her apologizing for the video in a way, or explaining that she knew it was going to cause a little bit of controversy, but, you know, she felt like Shea and Maddie were the only people who could play these parts, and she essentially kind of apologized for like triggering any pedophilia triggers in anyone. Is that right?
Yeah, that's pretty much the gist of it. And I mean, in watching the video, I immediately knew that there would be those kinds of claims or people that would be offended by that.
And just to provide the context to what, because we've gotten into it a little bit. Obviously, if anyone's seen the Chandelier video and hasn't seen Elastic Heart, they know what Maddie Ziegler wears in the Chandelier video, and this video has an adult male alongside of, how old's Maddie Ziegler? 12?
I think
or
she's
something?
11 still, or 12.
Yeah,
maybe
11. And Shy is in a, you know, like a male, just like bottom piece, like leotard thing.
No, like shorts, like tiny, like underwear shorts, basically.
Yeah, but they're like, they're kind of like dancer shorts.
He's not
shorts,
wearing
right?
a lot. He's no, not wearing a lot.
If like a male dancer, if like I've seen clips of like male dancers.
Have you?
Perform, like practicing, not mm-hmm. just males and females, and like those types of shorts are they around? Yeah. Couple dudes wear them.
They're around. They're around the block, and yeah, I mean, so Sia was. I saw this all
and,
the time.
Well, let's just finish it up. So they're dancing with each other at times, very closely? How do we describe this without just like saying what's happening?
No, well, closely, but not like provocatively. I think
not
that,
provocatively.
Right. Yeah,
she gets on. It's never done in that way. I didn't think anyway.
She's
in
like
a sexualized way or
at all.
Even romantically. It's not even romantically. I didn't find.
But there's definitely like a lot of physical contact between the two of them, and they're essentially like battling in the video, and that's pretty clear. They're like kind of rhythmically kicking each other, and you know, there's a struggle between the two of them, and the struggle, you know, sometimes is like violent, and sometimes it's like a struggle within how they're reacting to each other. That kind of like goes through waves of, you know, aggression towards each other, empathy for each other, and it's kind of moving in and out of these emotions towards each other, and it's coming through in this dance. And at times, like I said, Maddie's on her Shai's shoulders, and they're laying on the ground, and so, but there's nothing romantic or sexual or anything like that. So I think
it's important too to note the one tweet in the series that Sia tweeted out mentioned that both characters in the video are representative of states of her as a person. So that kind of detaches the idea that there's any sexualization between the two of them, because they're actually two components of her psyche. So I would actually bet that they talked about having him in a wig. I bet you that was something they discussed, because
that's
that would have made sense.
I feel like it would have had a different impact like that. It would have. I mean, these are great filmmakers. I feel like a dude in that Sia wig would be hard to like.
Well, she's done that.
To strike
she's
this same.
It,
strike. Yeah, no, you're right. But it would just be a lot harder to strike this same tone with that. I think it's like, despite the fact that these are both supposed to be Sia, I don't think that like you can make something so interpretive and like automatically assume that people are going to know that. So you can't really, while that does like exonerate them in reality, like in terms of like people's interpretations, I still think it's interesting to look at that, because there really is nothing, at least from my view, to indicate sexuality in this video. So I feel like that's being like placed into this through the person who's doing the interpretation, which they obviously had to be conscious of with this type of video. But like, what you take from what's going on here is on you. And, you know, if you like feel like this dude is like Shia LaBeouf is like trying to like
seduce
rape Maddie Ziegler, like, what's going on with you?
Yeah.
Why do you think, you know, I don't
know. You just
I don't
turn
want...
the tables around, Doug. You just turn the tables.
Why are you thinking this?
Well, this is a really interesting moment, I think, because the first chandelier video was so incredibly popular and pierced the mainstream so much. You know, it was on Ellen, and, you know, Maddie Ziegler did the dance on Ellen. You know, it was parodied all the way up to Saturday Night Live. I mean, it was one of those videos that really took off and was part of like the cultural conversation on a very high level in 2014. And, you know, it kind of walked the line between, you know, interpretive dance art and a music video that was purely for entertainment. And this one makes a bit of a turn into, I mean, I want to be clear, this is a beautiful video. I think it's brilliantly executed, and I think both Maddie Ziegler and Shia LaBeouf are incredible in this video.
So,
but it's amazing to see this sort of level of interpretive art be kind of like dragged into the mainstream. Like, if you look at the comments of this music video, I was prepared for kind of a cesspool, and all the kind of the top rated comments are of people saying, you know, this is art, you know, this is my interpretation of this art. You know, if you find anything offensive about this video, you know, you just don't understand art. And I don't think I've really seen that before, of like,
yeah,
people
like
on a white
YouTube comments. Usually YouTube comments are just like gay.
Yeah. If this was YouTube, you know, 5 years ago, the first comment would be just like fag. You know, right. it would be a totally different conversation, and it's really interesting that that conversation is happening, especially because this, you know, you take away that, you know, put the cage on a you know, black box theater with a single light on top, and you got yourself a Thursday night, interpretive dance show at the Art House Theater. You know, it's very much of that vein, and. But yet, it's a beautiful video. I think Shia LaBeouf and Maddie Ziegler have really funny... Sometimes this video is super funny, and sometimes it's very emotional. Like, there's a great moment where they kind of have a reconciliation, and Shia LaBeouf goes to touch, like console Maddie Ziegler, and she, like, bites him.
Yeah.
And he gets up and, like, starts acting all nutty. There's so much humor, and there's so much, like, depth to this video. I just don't think that... calling it out as a controversial or like looking at it that way is just like stopping short of everything.
Right. Totally. I was like heartbroken at the end of the video, and it was so unexpected. Like, I didn't think, like, watching the like first quarter of this video, like seeing like Maddie Ziegler, like chasing Shia LaBeouf around a cage with her like arm between her legs, like trying to catch him. Like, there's no way that I was like prepared to like, all right, well, in 2 minutes you're gonna cry.
Did you cry at this video, Doug?
No, I didn't cry at this video, but I was like super like, oh fuck, and like part of me was like, why do I even feel this way? Like, I like it's like I was not exactly sure. And then they kind of hold on it and drag it a little longer, and then I kind of like start to kind of understand my feelings. This is what this video is. It's a thing where you're talking about understanding your feelings at the end of it, and that's fantastic. It's fantastic. It's unfortunate that it follows like the best video of the year last year, and it, you know, draws from that so much, because there's no way to watch this video without the context of like, oh, this is a lot like that other music video. And so, like, I think it's interesting. Like, it definitely builds on that, but like, it's also very like surface level too. It can be like that favorite chandelier video from last year plus Shia LaBeouf. Like, it's a video that you can put in a headline, but that it's also,
and people super deep. People loved it.
I would kind of go with the other side of the coin and say that I would love to watch a video for every track on the album with Maddie in it. I would never get bored of that.
I'm not saying it's a bad thing or it's a thing that is going to pull boredom out of you. What I think, though, is that it can be reduced easily. And also, I think that is where some of, like, because it's so easy to reduce, like, once something's been, like, reduced to that, it's so easy to be latch on to, like, something unimportant. Like, oh, and also, he's old and she's a kid. And, oh, my God. And, you know, and, like, that's your – there you did. You wrote your piece.
It's kind of fun to imagine seeing this video if Chandelier would have never been released.
It's a whole other impact. Right. It's interesting to think about that. Because, like, part of me is like, well, I don't know if it's as good as Chandelier. And then, like, and I literally, like, said that to probably both of you guys, like, a few hours ago. And then I watched this video again. And I was like, man, maybe I love this a lot. And I kind of do. I think one tail end of this conversation that I think is just worth mentioning briefly is this is the second version of the Elastic Heart video. There was a Elastic Heart video that came out in 2013 that is obviously nothing like this, and it came out before Chandelier. And as far as I can tell, they've like scrubbed that video completely from the internet. But Adam, you saw that video, right?
Mm-hmm.
You remember?
I mean, I was a huge fan of the song when I first heard it. That the original version from the Hunger Games soundtrack actually had The Weeknd in it too, which was really cool. But I remember when the video dropped, I was really stoked, and I watched it. And I mean, no disrespect to the people that put it together, but it was sort of a mediocre video for a really awesome track. So,
well, I think the people who put it together are Sia, is who we have currently listed as the director of that other video.
Yeah, and I mean, it wasn't terrible, but it was definitely nowhere as impactful as what they've done here, for sure.
And now, who's The Weeknd?
People are making fun of me. I did not know who The Weeknd was, but I would like to... I think a good button on this conversation is somebody who brought up a very important question on YouTube, Deanna Lynn. And her question is as follows. So my question is, and this is no hate against Maddie, but this is her second video. When do we call her professional? Because if she is a pro dancer, she can't compete at the competitions for Dance Moms.
Hmm.
That's a legit question, because many, you know, even articles that have mentioned Maddie Ziegler as a dancer from Chandelier have also mentioned that she's from, you know, Dance Moms is a very popular program. So when does she become a professional? It's a very, very, very astute question.
Well, I will also say, and I don't have any firsthand knowledge of the production of these videos, but, you know, people volunteer for music videos all the time. Mm. Shia LaBeouf probably didn't get paid for this music video. Or, you know, it's very possible that he didn't. You know, music videos, people don't make lots of money for music videos. And it's very possible that Maddie Ziegler did these videos for no money, which may be illegal to have children working for free. But, like, that's what, like, dance competitions are, right? She's doing nothing different. Anyway, without getting into, like, the legal depths,
it's and possible she's accusing you're hitting a whole new set of triggers now.
But it's possible she did, it's possible she was not compensated for her time or paid, in which case maybe she's not a professional, and like maybe that's the rule, and or who knows. But like great question, just asking questions, and that was a good one.
Can I quickly say, I just want to say one more thing about both Elastic Heart and Chandelier, and I don't know if you guys are with me on this, but there's something to be said about the replay value of these videos compared to a lot of other videos. Like, I've watched these videos both a ridiculous amount of times, and Doug, you mentioned that you did go back to Elastic Heart, and do you feel like you'd watch it again as well?
Yeah, probably. I wouldn't go as far as to ever say I will watch it a ridiculous amount of times. So
I agree, though. I've watched Chandelier quite. It's got a huge replay value, and I believe this video will, in the next few months, prove to it as well.
I think you're not going to see the level of views that it got, because part of the internet draw of the first one was like, holy shit, look at this 11-year-old. Right. And it was like an unknown to a lot of people, and it like caught people off guard a lot. Like, this isn't doing that this to the same level, and so it's probably not going to like it. What's Chandelier at? Like 400 million views.
Chandelier is at I think at the end of the year it clocked in at 420 million views.
Yeah. So yeah, and now Elastic Heart is performing very well. When it came out yesterday, it's got 7 million views. I mean, and this is a very slow time for like
there's not much else to watch. So
high view music video. I mean, if you look at our like current top 10 music videos of the week, you know, we've got stuff with you know, under 20,000 views in our current top 10, and so, you know, this is rocking almost 7 million, and so way to go.
So let's I'm okay. We could just talk about this video.
This is the video with the most substance, and it's also the one that actually came out this week. So I think it's worth talking about. Let's stick with something else from this week. We'll go in the exact opposite direction, and we will talk about "Fancy" by Kidz Bop Kids.
Good.
A lot of kids this week. Lots of kids stuff.
Yeah. So this is maybe not the exact opposite. Then I guess the exact opposite would be like old men in a cage dancing with Ren Stevens.
Old men in a
field.
That's
for Disney kids.
So we should kind of address the fact that we do track Kidz Bop.
Well, they make music videos, right?
They do, and they make relatively, you know, high production value. It didn't always used to be that way. They have a song called "Chicken and Noodle Soup" from 2010.
Right, By the way, we went to this. We went to Fancy Next because if you just to see who really likes us, because this is a video that no one gives a fuck about. We're going to talk about it anyway.
It's got 6K videos.
It can't be nobody because this comes off of the 27th Kidz Bop album. It's from Kidz Bop 27, and the thing I wanted to talk about this music video is it's very interesting to me that they don't pull from the concept of the actual video at all for any of the Kidz Bop Kidz music videos. So that means that, like, there's a director out there who was like, hey, do you want to write a treatment for Fancy? And they're like, oh shit, Fancy by Iggy Azalea? And they're like, no, by Kidz Bop's Kidz. And then they have to then come up with a music video for the Kidz, and it's like something original. And they decided that, like, what is this? Some kind of like weird spaceship full of Kidz?
Yeah,
it's a spaceship full of Kidz
in space.
Right, a space Kidz spaceship full of Kidz Bop's logos. Pretty sweet.
Well, this video, what is depicted in this video, is honestly my personal nightmare. there's nothing more terrifying to me than dancing and camera mugging children.
Right.
It just weirds me out.
No, it's
children
very...
acting like older people and mugging for the camera. My own personal like nightmare, the thing that wakes me up with cold sweats is to like have a child who is 12 and interested in like in the performing arts and doing this sort of thing. And like having that be like a part of my life, I just because these kids are what? How old are these kids? That are they keep getting older in these Kidz Bop videos.
Yeah, these kids are probably like in reality, Kidz Bop's is probably like an under 14 thing, and these kids are probably all 14.
Because Kidz Bop used to be like songs for kids. Like if you look back on our Kidz Bop list, like they used to do some covers, but they also did like a song called Ice Cream and Guacamole and and Go Christmas and
the type of songs that the Olsen twins used to sing when they were like
yeah, give me pizza and that kind of like, songs about food and shit that kids love.
Right.
And
now wait, though, this Kidz Bop is exactly the same thing as I remember something from when I was a kid, Mini Pops. That was the same idea, right?
I don't know what that is.
I don't know.
Yes.
Yeah. Maybe is that the Canadian version of Kidz Bop?
Yeah, it was.
No, this predates it. I'm gonna do some research later.
All right.
I gotta find out.
Do it. Yeah. It predates it.
I think
What is it called?
It's Mini Pops.
All right.
I was little.
There better be 45 Mini Pops albums out there, because otherwise
there
I cannot believe it.
So my wife is a teacher, and she deals with obviously a lot of kids. So I thought she might have some insights into this. So I asked her I showed her some of these Kidz Bop videos and asked her what the kind of the point of these are. And you know, she said, you know, the main point, you know, some of them she felt did not, you know, needed a Kidz Bop version. For instance, Fancy, they take one verse out of Fancy, and they just like chuck the rest of it out. And it's interesting which verse they choose to keep in. But
well, that's because the thing for that, like, it resonates with the Kidz Bop fans is just the chorus.
Well, I also think that they took out the dirtier verses. I mean, did they not do the Charlie XCX lines about like trashing the hotel room and getting drunk on the minibar?
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
But she said that, you know, like a lot of the other Kidz Bop songs like Safe and Sound and Call Me Maybe, you know, don't really need Kidz Bop versions because they're already clean the way they are. So anyway.
No, that's it. Yeah, right. They cleaned it up. I guess it's just like there are parents out there who like just want to like, my pop music is not vanilla enough, and so they need to add more vanilla. The thing, just to tread back, because this is very troubling to watch to me as well. I don't know if it's my personal nightmare, but it's pretty close. Mainly because I don't. It's so unnatural. All of the kids' mannerisms are so unnatural that everything reads that like they were told to do that move precisely, and that makes me. kind of weird that, like, someone thought, like, this girl, like, grabbing her jacket a little bit and, like, pulling it in a little bit and then doing, like, the gun hand forward while she raps is gonna make it better. And that's, like, weird to me, that, like, the thought process that goes behind that. And so it's less about the kids, because they're kids, but and more about, like, the mechanism behind this.
Oh, totally, totally.
It makes me, like, weird. I get that you're there, too, but...
Because you know you can... It's always troubling when you could look at something and picture the apparatus around it that, that came together to create that. I think right. that's the ultimate kind of disturbing. And the fancy video is definitely in that vein, but I think one of the worst in this catalog is the Everybody Talks cover that they did in 2013, Kids Bop, where they're all...
Forgive me for not having the personal reference in my brain.
Well, this is the one where they're at the Atlantis Resort.
It drives me insane that this video came out in 2013, but it comes off Kids Bop 23. Mm. So that means that in 2 years, they've pumped out 4 Kids Bops albums, never once giving half a verse to the same kid twice. Like, this is always different kids, and all they get is, like, 4 words from the song.
It's like a hyper... It's like a very high turnover Menudo.
It's just looking for their one kid that they can sell off to Disney.
And they haven't had that yet. I don't think there's been a Kids Bop kid.
They're not like the Mickey Mouse Club that, like... breeds like 1,000 megastars. Like none of these kids do anything else but this.
But there is a girl in this that looks that I think could be it. Like the main girl in this is pretty good.
In which one are we talking about now? Everybody Talks?
No, in Fancy. The one she's sort of like the main girl. She's
I didn't pick up that there was a main girl. I didn't pay enough attention.
Yeah, she's in a lot of different outfits, but like there's two people.
It's her and the one kid with the glasses.
Right, the glasses and the fedora. Yeah. Yeah, they're kind of front and center of the whole deal. You're right, Adam. And she's pretty good. She's not as like awkward. And the kids, you know, the kid with the fedora who looks like a 12-year-old Pharrell, is also pretty good, but
he's got a little bit of flow.
He's got some flow. She's got less flow, but more camera presence.
They're not doing anything after this.
No.
I mean, they're gonna go back to school, is what they're gonna do. Hopefully.
But I do think that Sophia Grace is gonna do some cool stuff.
Oh god!
Ooh, motherfucking Adam Alexander with the cool transition, and also for those keeping track, the third video starring a child that we're gonna talk about.
Kids are what's hot in 2015.
Kids are fucking in 2015.
Great. So.
And actually, you know, this is the second video this week that has an Ellen tie to it. Because Sophia Grace was definitely an Ellen kind of protege.
Yeah, so just like the last 12 years, Ellen is big in 2015.
So we should just mention that. So Sophia Grace is, she's very, very, she's much younger than any of the Kids Bop kids. She's what, 8?
She's super young, although the oldest she seems much older than like my mental picture of Sophia Grace when you say that. Like this is she's definitely like older now.
She's 8. Like, yeah, you're right. She's 8.
And because her older stuff, her previous stuff was like Tea Party kid, and now she's like Bowling Alley Kid.
Well, so her previous video was 2013, Girls Just Gotta Have Fun, directed by Matt Alonzo, who has been on this very podcast.
And he also directed the Best Friends video.
He also directed the Best Friends video, which came out this week. And this is like this is definitely a more grown-up Sophia Grace.
And this video also makes me, for whatever reason, significantly less uncomfortable.
Is that a double negative? Yeah, he does a good job with that.
I'm way more like, I am not as fearful of this video as I am for the Kids Bop video. This feels a lot less manufactured.
I think there's a few reasons for that. Number one, Sophia Grace is super, super cute, super charming. She definitely knows exactly what she's doing on camera. And Matt Alonso brings this sort of really kind of humorous and lighthearted take to it that I think is really, really necessary for this kind of video. Because this is not a video that just anybody can handle. You kind of have to have a really, attention to detail touch like Matt Alonso has. Mm-hmm. And he does a really fantastic job with this. Also, the plot of this video basically is, Sophia Grace is talking about her best friends, and she's got a kind of crew, a posse of her best friends, which are around her age, and they do kind of girl stuff. I don't know, and they go into like a grown-up's, or I guess her mom's closet, and try on big hats, which little girls have done in every single.
This movie. Is like kids. It's kids being kids.
It's
right?
Kids 101. This is, kids were doing this in movies in the 80s. And then but then the mom comes in. She takes the ball to Kmart, which I didn't know still existed. And they go
so very specifically Kmart.
Very, very specifically Kmart.
And you ever see the mom's face?
No, you see her boobs, but you never see her face.
and her back.
Yeah,
you see her torso, but yeah, I get what you mean.
And then Sophia Grace is also singing and rapping, by the way.
Which is not unusual. She came on the scene rapping Nicki Minaj stuff.
Exactly. Yeah. She's pretty good in this. She's rapping in front of an infinity pool, which it's like she's kind of like in the same setting that you would put Pitbull in, and he would also look like in place. It's a very interesting video in that way.
And it's the type of video that Matt Alonso has made.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Like, in for grown-ups. And I think another key difference between Sophia Grace and Kidz Bops, just kind of like as artists, even though I stretch...
oh, boy, here we go. We're starting up 2015 strong.
This is big. This is huge. It's just kind of like the context in which those two things exist. So Kidz Bops, so the means in which the talent for Kidz Bops is discovered, I believe, comes from like parents who think their kids are talented enough to be stars and like seek someone who's like, I can help you turn your kid into a big pop star. And so that they make a music video that is trying to be a pop video. And they do that while the kids are trying to sing a pop song. Sophia Grace was like discovered because she was like rapping on the internet and Ellen saw it and she was discovered for like a talent that was there already. It was like Sophia Grace has artistic value even though she's 8 because she's fun to watch and charismatic and charming and talented. Like I'm sorry guys, but I can't say guys meaning the kids, because I can't say that about any of the kids in the Kidz Bop video. Like I can't even remember what any of them look like. They're all just like, that kid has yellow on. Like when you guys said like, oh, the kid with the glasses, I was like, which one is that? I don't remember there being a star of this video, and I watched the video. So I didn't like not watch the video. I actually did, and nothing stuck with me except for like there was a lot of lens flares and uncomfortableness, and like I took stuff away. I like know more about Sophia Grace as a musician and a performer. As a performer, maybe not as a musician, but as a performer, this video, she's developed further in this video. Is that weird, or are you guys with me?
I'm with you.
I'm with you too. Yeah,
she's got some skills. Fuck yeah. I mean, we're not sure how, like, you know, as an artist, but she's got some skills, like you said. She was discovered for being able to do something.
And it's in this kind of video, this trope or this idea of this kind of video is kind of perfect for her. This kind of video and this kind of song is used relatively frequently to introduce like younger stars. And I'm thinking of the not younger in terms of how young she is, but like newer stars. There's the I'm reminded of the Oath video by Cher Lloyd featuring Becky G, directed by Anna Lux Davis from 2012, which is basically like this, like the Sophia Grace video plus, you know, like 10 years. It's basically, you know, very shares very similar things. The song is about, you know, girls being friends and, you know, features the same kind of themes, only more grown up. They're not, you know, rapping in a toy aisle in Kmart. But it has, you know, it shares those similar themes. This is kind of something you see over and over in, if you kind of look for it. It's kind of like a music video trope. But Sophia Grace is she's just kind of super funny and she's super into it, and she's a good, you know, good rapper, very surprisingly. So I thought this video was really hilarious. And I think it's like one of the top videos this week, right?
Yeah, second most popular. We forgot to write, we wrote 2014 on our check and not 2015, and we actually accidentally had that one mismarked. But now it says 2015, and now it's on our chart.
Still writing 2014 on our music videos.
Yeah,
actually, it says 2013.
I'm best friends? No, what are you talking about?
Fucking Adam, man.
On Girls Just Gotta Have Fun.
Yeah, on Girls Just Gotta Have Fun.
Oh, that's the old one. I'm fired.
I want to talk about... All right, let's talk about... You are fired. I want to talk about another one that did come out this week. I want to talk about Till I Die by Machine Gun Kelly. And I want to talk about this video for a very specific reason. Mm. We don't need to dwell on the actual music video. We waste our time with that. No, that's disrespectful. This is a very successful kind of just like city-oriented music video. The song Till I Die is essentially Machine Gun Kelly professing his love for the city of Cleveland, and he's going to do so till he dies. And the video is basically just him performing around Cleveland, a lot of, like, you know, shots of just like people on the streets interacting with Machine Gun Kelly, et cetera, et cetera. I'm sure you guys watched all of that stuff. But then at the end of the video, did you guys get this far?
Oh, yeah, I got this far.
There is a whole behind the scenes video of this video. So the video, the song is like, you know, 3.5-4 minutes long, but the video is 7 minutes long, and it's got like a 2.5-minute behind the scenes at the end of the music video. And then you scroll down a little bit further on our IMDb page, and you look and you see that Machine Gun Kelly is credited as an editor on this video. Mm-hmm. And lots of things start to make sense and start to fall into place about that. What do you guys think about that element of this video?
Well, this video to me, I'm so tired of these types of videos. These, like,
yeah, they're never going away. So
welcome to the neighborhood. Yeah, I'm gonna tolerate them, but I just find nothing interesting. And I mean, I get you love Cleveland. I love Cleveland too. I've been to Cleveland. It's a good city. But you know, the shots of the city and the, you know, the group of people, you know, I understand there's some cool people in Cleveland, but I don't think that makes for compelling music video. You're right. I was looking at the progress bar and I was like, I'm like 2/3 of the way through this video and it's songs wrapping up. And then in starts the behind the scenes right after it on the roll. And it's not your typical behind the scenes where it's like, here's how we made the video. This is basically Machine Gun Kelly's annotated tour of Cleveland and like all the little like nuances and all the navel gazing that he wants to do, which I don't think, you know, I've heard of Machine Gun Kelly and he's a relatively successful guy. I don't think that really his level of fame really warrants this yet, but
I did find it like interesting, and like I actually was like, he's got a pretty big fan base, Machine Gun Kelly, like a pretty, like, you know, a loyal fan base.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think for them, like, that type of stuff is super relevant and I like, or super interesting probably. And I was like kind of interested in elements of that stuff. I thought it was kind of like, I was just interested by like what they were doing with that. Like, I get that like artists, want to put out different types of video content to like support their YouTube accounts. But it's weird that they like jam it into one video. But yeah, it was very, very interesting. It's interesting that Machine Gun Kelly was listed as an editor. And it's very interesting that they put the whole behind the scenes video at the end here.
Well, it's not really behind the scenes. It's more like a cliff notes to what you're seeing, because like in certain scenes they're in like a room with lots of scribbles on the wall, and you see that in the music video, and then later in the behind the scenes you get to see like he tells you like what this is and what this means.
Right. But then there are other times where they're just showing you clips of performance and a man holding a camera.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like they exactly do work that stuff into. One thing in defense of this type of video, and it's tired, and you're never gonna like, you know, it's almost impossible to do something new with it. But I think in hip hop, I think that the place that you're from is like historically like really important. Obviously, anyone who's listened to a lot of hip-hop, like, this is definitely, like, a trend that has always been there, and it's, like, in the fabric of hip-hop, being, like, really proud of where you're from. Like, hip-hop culture, like, came from, you know, people, like, you know, part of it came from, like, people who wanted to be proud of a place that, like, was less than, like, appealing, and trying to, like, make a place that, like, most people, like, disregard and add a value to it, and add a value to like the things that most people would like look at and think negatively about. And so the reason that you're never going to like get away from that is because like that type of thing is in the fabric of like hip-hop, I think. And you know, that's why you're going to get it. So that's my defense of that.
Yeah, and I understand that, and I think that is I think that's a huge part of hip hop, like more than rock artists. Although I generally know where they come from, I very much identify, you know, hip hop artists by their like origin place. Not only because they mention a lot, you know, like Lil Wayne mentions Holly Grove. You know,
I mean, yeah, every
New Orleans a lot, but you know, and you know, Kanye West filmed the video for Homecoming in Chicago because that song's about Chicago. But this sort of just like, let's get everybody together and you know, mug for the camera and show us all the spots in the neighborhood. There's just nothing. You know, Lil Wayne never tells us about, you know, what's specifically in Holly Grove, like the convenience store or whatever, or like all the little things that he remembers from Holly Grove. He just identifies it as like, as a place, and he uses that as a place as, you know, this is where I came from, and this is where I'm going, and he connects it as his roots. There's not really like, he's not like, hey, by the way, you know I'm from Holly Grove, Louisiana. Let me show you everything about this place and some people from it. You don't need to get that deep into it, you know?
Now, also, though, early in Lil Wayne's career, he did a ton of videos like this. And, like, Cash Money Records also, like... But this is not early in Machine Gun Kelly's career either. And this also, like... And that, in that time, when it was early in Lil Wayne's career, like... That's almost all you were getting from hip hop videos. Like
that's a bad example. I'm thinking more of like
no, but you're right though. Their overall point is right. Like they don't get as deep as this like it's not necessary to do like it usually is a different purpose. And now like this song is also like over the top about Cleveland. Like at the beginning he's like of the song is just him like talking about like just like no matter where I fucking go, like just like saying like people wouldn't let him perform because he talks about Cleveland too much, like, which is an insane thing to hear. Like it could be true, but that's weird.
But picture Kendrick Lamar doing a video like this about Compton.
Just that. I get the overall point, even without like a great example to grab onto.
Kendrick Lamar never. I mean, he's constantly talking about Compton and his up, you know, where he came
from. His album was called Good Kid, Mad City, and it's essentially meaning Compton.
But yeah, but you would never see a video. I would be shocked if I saw a video like this from him, because it's not that literal. He's using it as a narrative device. Mm-hmm. And Machine Gun Kelly doesn't tell us anything about Cleveland in this video. He never gives it, like, what is, if, like, I've been to Cleveland. I know what Cleveland's about in general. If you don't know anything about Cleveland, you know, tell me what Cleveland is like after watching this video or hearing about Machine Gun Kelly rap about it. I don't think you could.
And I think, as far as I know, it's like a lot, like, Cleveland has a lot to do with the Machine Gun Kelly, I think.
It just looks like every other place in, you know, every other place in America you can find a place like this. There's nothing that says anything about him about being from Cleveland.
Well, and I think part of that, like, I feel like you can capture, you can do that type of video and you can capture the energy of the place better with filmmaking. And I think that, you know, with an edit and the way that you use footage and the way that you use visual storytelling, you can do this type of video and have a lot better, leave a much more significant impact from the video. I'm thinking of a video like Canal by Rat King, for example, which directed by Eric KU, which came out last year. That's a video that's a song about Canal Street in New York City, and then they essentially like shot the video in that area. But it is a completely different, you get a completely different feel from that video. You know, I feel like you learn and understand a lot more about that part of New York City by listening to that song and watching that video. And I don't think you get that from this video. I got the most from the behind the scenes clips when watching this. Like, that's where I was like, oh shit, this is neat. Everything else I was not too, super stoked on. And I think that might come from, like, if Machine Gun Kelly actually did, like, take part in editing this video, which I think he might have, because there is scripts, like, words at the end of the video, and it's all, like, in first person from Machine Gun Kelly.
So, oh, like, I have no doubt that he was the guy behind that, yeah.
Like, actually in the editing bay. And so, you know, he's not a filmmaker, and so you're not going to necessarily be able to, like, capture that energy of a place if you're not as, you know, skilled in editing. I think we should finish this up with DJ Snake, because that's also our second best video. This is also a follow-up music video to our second best video of the year last year.
Explain, I don't understand what's going on in this video.
I'm just, like, so surprised. You're like a huge Dori Oskovitz fan.
I am, but I don't understand this video. And it's nothing against Dori Oskovitz or anything about it. I just don't.
Or apes,
yeah. I'm super racist against apes dressed in as people. But this is a failure on my part to understand the narrative of what is happening. There's something wrong in my brain where I do not understand what is happening.
It is. I'll back you up on that. It's a bit confusing, but I basically know, kind of know what he's up to. He's a drug dealer. I know that.
He's a drug dealer. So what is the, does he fall in love with the people, one of the people he's dealing drugs to?
I think so. The one girl that he Instagram creeps seems to be the girl that shows up for a fix. But maybe not. Hard to say. He likes strippers.
I definitely picked the, yeah, Adam's narrative is kind of where I was at, you know. It's an ape, a drug dealer who's an ape who lives in a human world. And is crushing on one of his clients.
And he goes on a bit of a bender.
And he has a gun.
It gets like very aggressive, and it's very dark. And
but you have to watch the video to find out if he uses the gun.
But wait, like I really love this video. You guys didn't love this video?
Oh, I love it, but I don't understand it.
But it's, is that, so was that your, like, big takeaway
from it? I just accepted that I didn't really understand it, and okay. I just loved it all the same.
Right, because it looked
awesome.
And it's, like, to me, what I really, like, took away, from, like, not maybe took away, but, like, what I really loved about this video was how how grounded the whole thing felt, right? Like, I feel like this is a video that in someone else's hands, and what we're talking about right now is like how ridiculous it is, right? Like,
yeah,
how
it's like, it's a silly treatment.
Unconvincing,
done really well.
Yeah, how like unconvincing it would be, or like how strain, like, you know, dumb. Like, I feel like those are the types of ideas that, like, or feelings you would get from this idea, like, on paper.
Like, if it was a Kidz Bops video, it would be terrible.
Right. If it was a Kidz Bops video. But, like, this is, like, a completely, like, we're not talking about any of that stuff. Like, you guys are talking about the fact that you had issues, like, understanding the narrative. And that's obviously, like, it wasn't something that was, it's not something that's, like, spoon-fed, obviously. But no, I loved it, and I thought it felt like really real to me, despite the fact that this is like about, like, this feels more real than like Planet of the Apes with Paul Giamatti.
And it kind of feels like a video that you're not meant to overthink, because it's sort of like, here, this monkey lives in people world, and that's where you stop thinking about it and you just watch it.
I think it's worth talking about that, This is a DJ Snake song, and DJ Snake.
Well, it's actually a remix of a Luna George original. If we're gonna get technical about it.
Well, this song came out. This came out on.
No, it's totally a remix.
But this song, right here, came out on DJ Snake's Vivo account, and like this is definitely like a DJ Snake follow up to Turn Down for What from last year, which was our number two video of the year, and is another like massively successful, you know, 150+ million view, kind of epic music video directed by Daniels. Basically, Turn Down for What and Chandelier, and Hero Murai's Flying Lotus video. Like, those three videos were pretty much on everybody's top 10, top 20 list from last year. They were the videos we saw the most. So I think it's interesting that, you know, they went from like this, DJ Snake went from like this crazy over the top, you know, dancing penis music video to like a dark, you know, kind of like Gus Van Sant movie with an ape.
Yeah, for sure.
So my kind of wonder about this video is that we don't really get a lot of context for why he is. I mean, Instagram stalks this girl in the first 45 seconds, and then the rest of the video is basically his destruction, his kind of like self-loathing, and his inability to deal with something, his feelings for this girl. It almost reminds me of the necro.
Maybe that he's an ape. Maybe that's part of what he's dealing with, and maybe that like is part of why he can't have this girl.
In that way, it feels very much like the necro goblicon, no one survives video, directed by Brandon Dermer, where you kind of have a similar storyline where there's somebody this person is an other creature in a regular world and can't have some female, and kind of rages out on that, and then.
But that like is like more of like a comedic and gory rage, and this is more of like a gritty, you know, dark, you know.
Yeah, but so much is spent on that I don't really know why this guy's upset. Why this?
Yeah, but I don't understand like why on a podcast where we spent like 45 minutes talking about how much we loved the Sia video and like and all of that like is so like so much of that is like left to interpretation and feeling, and you could go so many ways with it that you're like trying to tie this video up into a bow.
Because this video puts onus on itself for being a narrative video by being so complex. Narrative, basically. Yeah, there is an expectation here that when you set up even like a piece of a narrative, that there needs to be some sort of character motivation. And I feel like that is the number one big glaring issue with the Nicki Minaj Pink Print music video, or music video series, or whatever you want to call it. And I feel it a little bit here. I mean, I'm not saying it's a bad video. I think it's a good video, but the motivations that are being set up, or the motivations that are kind of being played out, and resolved and are in conflict, I don't feel are set up quite as much as we need them to be.
It kind of feels like there's scenes missing.
Right, like we missed something. Maybe, we missed some sort of point here.
Yeah. But maybe that's intentional, that they're just giving us fragments of the narrative. Lots of videos do that. Mm-hmm. Hard to say, but it does feel kind of a little bit confusing. A few scenes in the middle to bridge things together would probably have made it clearer, but maybe they didn't want to.
I just don't. I mean, those things would make the narrative more clear. I agree. Yeah. Whether or not I think it is necessary to have in a music video to like have a narrative with that much clarity, I don't know how necessary that is, and whether or not music video that being present in a music video, like, very rarely, like, will dictate my opinion of it. But you know, that's why we have three of us on this show.
Would it be possible to end with the Pink Print really quick?
I mean, whatever. We could go as long as we want with this puppy.
Whoa, so. That's podcasting for you.
I think we can go Pink Print and then fucking Kid Rock.
So this was released in late December by Nicki Minaj. And Nicki Minaj has a new album out called The Pink Print. What was her first album's name? It had something to do with Pink. Pink Friday. So Nicki Minaj,
there's an album in between.
But I thought that was like the re-release.
It's called it's called Roman Reloaded, but it's all a difference. It's just like,
oh, okay.
It's just what it's called.
Nicki Minaj is all about the pink and the Roman. And this is
her new album is fantastic, by the way.
It's a good album. I like that song Only. That's a good one with Lil Wayne.
That's probably my least favorite, but whatever, we won't go there.
So this music video is kind of in the vein of Kanye West's Runaway video, where it's kind of like a sampling of songs, or like I can't think of any of the examples, but it's a sampling of songs that are kind of
like
strung.
The Flying Lotus Until the Quiet Comes video that came
exactly,
out a couple years
ago.
Kanye West
Runaway.
Oh, you said that earlier.
Yeah, yeah. So where there is like kind of like a appetizer sampling of the songs from the album, kind of tied together into a loose narrative, or maybe not even a narrative at all, but some sort of longer form video. And mm-hmm. The Kanye West Runaway case, I think the video was around half an hour. This one is roughly half that at 16 minutes. And it features three parts. That are separated throughout here, and directed by Taylor Cohen and Francesco Carozzini. This is executive produced by Nabil, who we've talked about many times on this podcast. This is a difficult video, I think, for a lot of reasons, and the number one reason I think is that it kind of errs on the side of the inaction, and I'll give you an example. The opening of the music video, you can watch this video for a good solid 4 or 5 minutes, and it looks like a car commercial starring Nicki Minaj.
I think the narrative is like a car commercial. I don't think it looks like a car commercial.
Does it have
in terms of the composition?
Yeah, no, it's filmed very. Yeah, it's filmed.
What's the narrative? She's crying.
I think that this is a stylistically nice video, right?
Sure.
Like, this is a video that stylistically is nice, and this is also a video. If we're like looking at it like a music video, I prefer personally this style to like the type of style that we normally Yeah, I mean, I think that, like, Hannah Lux Davis makes really great music videos, but, like, my personal preference is going to be something, like, that favors this video more. So, like, in terms of, like, directionally, I'm behind what is attempted in this video. Does that make sense?
No, not really. Because compare and contrast the two opening shots of this music video, or the opening shot of the music video with the opening shot of the Kanye West Runaway music video. Your memory. The opening shot of the Kanye West music video for Runaway is, I believe, is Kanye West. If not, it is some man running extremely fast down a road, like he's trying to get away from something. And then, you know, this is very basic kind of narrative stuff, but if you've never kind of tried to make something like this, you may not, you know, realize how you need to create that tension or need to create some sort of narrative when you're going in that direction. So you wonder, like, what is this guy running away from? Where is he? Who is he? What is going on here? And that creates, like, a narrative tension that rolls the story forward. And I'm not saying that the Kanye West video kind of plays out and into some amazing narrative, but it has interest to it. The first many shots of this video are of absolutely nothing but just, like, buildings.
Right.
And then, even then, like, I can go to, you know, 2 minutes into this video, and literally all I've seen are buildings and Nicki Minaj driving.
Wait, those buildings aren't just buildings. There's narrative elements to these buildings. There's, like,
such as
Nicki Minaj is clearly is in a state of, like, confusion, or, like, she's upset and she's bewildered as she drives. And the way that these buildings are shot is they're not, like, moving in a way that seems natural. They're, like, drifting apart from one another. They're spinning around. I feel like the way those buildings are shot is mirroring the emotions that Nicki Minaj is feeling as she drives. I agree that there's inaction and that goes on for a while, but I don't think that it's worthless or useless or filler. I think that they're trying to achieve something with that. The level of success is up to, you know, your own opinion, but I think that they're after something there.
Well, it's the same reason they tell film students to not start with the montage of somebody getting ready and making their breakfast, which, you know, if you take a batch of, like, first year film students, most of them will do something along those lines. Weirdly enough, you have to tell them not to.
And a lot of Hollywood movies still.
Like the Dexter opening is a good example of that. Although they had a reason to do that to create
some tension.
Right,
they're, like, spinning it on its head.
But there's no, we finally get into, like, some sort of, like, narrative tension, like 2 minutes and 9 seconds into the video, where you see her fighting with her boyfriend, and even though that's not super interesting, even though that's the thread that carries the entire video through, we're still not even, you know, privy to anything that to capture our interest until 2 minutes in. I just feel like when you're taking a 15-minute video, you have to kind of pay attention to that kind of stuff.
I don't disagree. I don't disagree. However, I think that's aside the original point that I was making. You're looking at this in the context of, like, comparing it to, like, other long music videos, Kanye West and Flying Lotus, which is a fair context to look at it, and it doesn't necessarily stack up to those, or doesn't at all. But if you're looking at it in the context of Nicki Minaj music videos, this is a direction I'm into. Nicki Minaj is someone who, as much as I love the Anaconda video, has this year put out a music video that is basically just about butts. 100% music video about butts in the jungle. That's what Anaconda is about. And I think that for that song, that's the music video you need to make, and bingo, they got it. But, like, we go from that to a music video where we're, where at least me, I am like searching for, and you are too, like some emotional tension and some like reasoning behind the things we're looking at. And when do you ever think about that in a butt music video?
That's like the lowest barrier, though. That's like the lowest.
We're talking about Nicki Minaj music videos, though. You know what I mean? Like, that's what we're talking about.
I know, but it's just so, it's so ham-fisted in this. It's like Nicki Minaj, shots of Nicki Minaj crying. Like, I would take Super Bass or Anaconda over this any day. Because she's, I understand the direction she's going. She has a nice, you know, a beautiful voice, and she's changing up the style and she's changing up the direction. But I don't think that there is any vision here or any sort of compelling reason to be interested in her as an artist at the, visually at this point. Because, you know, crying behind the wheel of a car driving around the city because you fought with your boyfriend or whatever is not a compelling narrative. I mean, I'm sorry, it's just not. Interesting.
You're right. No, you're right. You're definitely right. You're right about that. And like, whatever, like, kind of, right? This is like a risky thing for her to try to do and to put money behind. Like, the people who pay for her music videos are going to be like, give me more butts in the jungle. What are you talking about for any of this? And I don't know. I just think that, like, the fact that this music video exists is a plus in my book, not a minus.
I don't hate that.
Hey, that's me.
In terms of, I guess, Nicki Minaj videos and changes of directions, where I personally would like to see her go more as like the Pills and Potions direction, which was still kind of a more serious direction. She definitely wasn't as crazy looking in it, but I just thought it had that creativity. Like, it was very unique, right? And it was still like a stylistic change.
Nicki Minaj has put out a wide variety of music videos this year. That's when you said Pills and Potions, I was like, holy shit, Pills and Potions was this year. And then so was Lookin' Ass, N-Word. Yeah, last year, right. So is Lookin' Ass, N-Word, directed by Nabil. Nicki Minaj has put out 5 music videos, essentially in the last year. And they've all been like very different than one another too. That's pretty.
I think maybe she's testing the waters of just kind of seeing what kinds of different things she can do. And if that's what this video is, then it's a success because she's still kind of experimenting with what she wants to do.
I think she could do it all. She's pretty great. I like Nicki Minaj a lot, and I don't think I've always been able to say that.
I like that she's pretty great. I really like that she doesn't really diss on other female rappers very much. I think that's a cool thing. She kind of sticks up for them.
Because she doesn't fucking need to. Yo, all these bitches is his sons.
I liked her verse in Only, where she makes a lot of weird analogies about just like dumb wordplay things. Like, hold on, I gotta look up the lyrics real quick. hold on, I gotta cut this out. Hold on, but it's funny. Hold on,
she's great. Nicki Minaj is awesome.
Here we go. Okay. Okay. Here's a good Nicki Minaj line. That's pretty funny. Had to show bitches where the top. No, that's the wrong one. these hoes couldn't test me even if their name was Pop Quiz. Now that's a choice line. Here's another one. I don't fuck with these chickens unless their last name is Cutlet.
Yeah.
Those are the ones that you're highlighting as the ones you like.
No, I'm just kidding. Those are just dumb lines. But I think that I definitely respect the way she's going. I feel like the Pink Print movie has artists getting in the way of everybody else in the creative process written all over it to me.
Yeah, maybe.
I don't think this would have gotten through anybody else. But I feel like she has shown in the past that she is kind of willing to let people make other creative decisions while bringing her own personal decisions to the project. I think Superbase is a really great example for that. And even Anaconda is a great example of that. And my personal favorite, Stupid Ho, directed by Hype Williams, is also a great video and a great collaboration. So I think she needs to bring that kind of element.
I think she's worked super hard and she's earned the right to make something like the Pink Print video.
Well, if then I have the right to, I don't know what I have the right to do, but that just
bored
shit. We have
the right to make a 2-hour podcast.
We have the right to talk to close with this Kid Rock music video. Can we just do that real quick? All right. Because there's something really important I want to talk to you about this Kid Rock video. And this Kid Rock video for First Kiss, which is a song that I think was made with an algorithm. Because that's how formulaic that shit is. I think they just like put a bunch of numbers in an algorithm and this fucking song came out.
It's
the other
iPhone
end.
App.
It's fucking app. Insane. And the music video is literally just performance and driving, but like to me, does Kid Rock seem like strangely nervous during his performance? Like to me, he looks nervous as shit as he performs in front of this band. Like he like just met them or something. Like I don't know. This is really weird in how like how uncomfortable and stiff fucking Kid Rock feels.
Even driving, he looks like he just got his driver's license.
Or maybe he's trying to quit drugs or something. I don't know what it is, but he's like he seems completely out of place in like in a thing that was like that he should be like part of completely, and he does not feel that way to me.
Kid Rock is one of the most fascinating people in any genre, I feel like. And I don't think he gets enough credit for that, because he's absolutely amazingly fascinating. I mean, you look at... I challenge you to take two videos from two different artists and have them be so different. So watch Ba-Da-Da-Ba, or whatever, from 1999, directed by Dave Myers, and this video back-to-back. It's just like Kid Rock just absorbs things, like new ideas, like, and he's like, oh, I'll do this now. I mean,
this is me now.
You remember the what's the name of the video All Summer Long that he did a few years ago, which was sort of like Sweet Home of Alabama esque kind of southern country rock song that did really super well. The video has 51 million views, and this one is very much in the vein of these what I hear. No, you know, constantly on country radio, which is basically, you know, reminiscing about the good old days where you were cool and young and had a girl that looked half decent and you were cruising around town and doing stuff. I mean, it's basically exactly that. It is
had a girl that looked half decent.
Yeah, and he's the thing that's so fascinating about Kid Rock is he sells it better than anybody. Like I watched this video and I was like, man, I am super bummed out I'm super nostalgic about when I had a girlfriend. We were driving around drinking out of the same cup in my Chevy. I believed that was like some sort of forgotten past for me. He's really good at that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Did anyone read? I'm not getting behind anything positive about Kid Rock. Did anyone read Kid Rock's op-ed in Rolling Stone from 5 days ago?
No, what did it say?
Kid Rock has penned a no-nonsense op-ed piece that shares his views on technology, drugs, abortion, and gay marriage. Oh, you guys ready to hear his thoughts on those things?
I think we'll link to it in the show notes.
The headline, when you Google it, is Kid Rock : I don't face tweet. So now we know his thoughts on that. Nothing strikes me as someone like trying to pretend like they don't know about technology than combining two social media accounts into one thing. Face tweet is a fucking fuck you, Kid Rock.
Like, he's the ultimate.
You know what You know what Facebook is. Like,
he is the ultimate chameleon. He is the ultimate. If you want him to play the grandmother writing the community newspaper about how they don't know about technology, Kid Rock will do that. If you want him to do the most generic, like Toby Keith-esque country rock song and music video, like, Kid Rock is there. I feel like Kid Rock Kid Rock, if you paid him enough money, could release like a smooth jazz album for the right the right price.
Yo, he's got it on the shelf, just ready for a buyer, man. He's good to go, man. He's got the flute and everything. Yeah, no, totally. Smooth jazz has flutes. Yeah, no, absolutely. I didn't read this op-ed. I do know that, like, he's pretty conservative, so I don't have high hopes on what his thoughts on these issues are. But he could surprise me.
And we should also thank Kid Rock in general for bringing the United States Uncle Cracker, which the director of this video, Eric Welch, he directed the Blue Skies video by Uncle Cracker from 2015, which has an IMDb pick on it, believe it or not. So there you go.
Oh my god, I remember this video. This video is actually pretty sweet.
It's a funny video. Eric Welch is a good director.
It's tough. No, this video is not, like, bad because of Eric Welch. It's bad because, like, Kid Rock feels like he's afraid.
Afraid of what, though? What is he afraid of?
I don't know. Like, it's like he's never seen a video camera before, or like he's got like a crush on the female bass player. I don't know what it is, but yeah.
He's packed so many people into this band. He's like, he is afraid of not having some sort of person in this band. I also like how the younger Kid Rock is like, looks like a model with that they just like painted on a goatee onto, or like a chin strap beard onto.
Right, you're the baby Kid Rock. I am. All right.
You look like Ashton Kutcher playing the young Steve Jobs, basically.
Rocking a fake beard. Note to everybody: fake beards look fake. Just so you know. I don't know if Ashton Kutcher's beard was fake.
This video looks like that. This is a classic, kind of like I'm a touring. There's different types of musicians. There's like, you know, musician where they're all about their craft and their art, and then there's like the touring musicians where they're like, fuck it, I'm bagging in the money, and you can always tell the difference by their drummer. If they have an overweight eccentric drummer, they're totally in the tour bagging that money thing. And the best example of that is Paul McCartney, who has that, like, you know, 350 pound like Hawaiian drummer, who's really good.
So surrounds himself with drums.
By a ton of drums. And Kid Rock is definitely doing the same thing. He has, I can't describe this woman who's playing the drums, but it's
a lot of females in his band.
Yeah, a lot of, he's doing a little Jack White thing. Yeah.
I don't know about that, because there's like 45 people. Like, the ratio is still pretty bad, but yeah, they did pop up. It's not all white males, so maybe he's not so Republican. And with that,
closing up shop.
Yeah, we'll shut it down. 2 hours is enough. This is going to take like, this takes people like 6 rides to work. By the time they're done listening to this podcast, one of our new podcasts will be out.
So, Doug, do you have anything to plug?
Do I have anything to plug? No.
That's good, because we don't have time for it. Adam, do you have anything to
plug? What about... No. Adam?
No, nothing. Nothing to plug. Let's shut it out.
Okay. Since you asked, though, Sarah, you?
Well, I'm going to be going on tour with Kid Rock
later. Oh, shit. Are you going to play drums for him?